Hello everyone and welcome to Next Generation Saints. I'm your host, Nick Coons. Before we get started today, I want to go to remind everyone to like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you may be listening to podcasts. It helps get it out to the rest of the world so more people get to hear the Word of God. So, an interesting question was brought up, and yes, today is going to be another Give Me an Answer by Pastors Cliff Connectly and Stuart Connectly. The question that is presented here is, without God, what is reality? What is love? And without God, reality is, well, this is where it gets into like a mind twister. Reality is what I can perceive in front of me that is taking place. That's rather simple. But what is love? Well, that's more complicated because love is very much misunderstood in our generation. I know because I have family members and other friends of mine who are very pro-LGBT. And a lot of it comes down to saying things like, you know, love is love. But what is love is a question that's brought up. What is this thing that we keep searching for called love? And more or less, nowadays, I find that we're not searching, at least when we are looking in the flesh, like LGBTQ movement or whatever it may be, we're not looking for love. We're looking for a thing called affirmation. Affirmation is kind of like the comparison between the two of these is really what you find when you talk to someone about love or infatuation. Love and infatuation can often be seen as the same thing, but they're completely different. It's like looking at the mineral gold and fool's gold. So without God to be able to demonstrate to us what reality is, what we're actually perceiving, and what love is, I would argue there is no way that you can tell between both of them, because it would just be a subjective appearance and everything would be fool's gold until you define a true thing. But let's dive into this and let's see how Cliff answered these students. Again, the episode is Without God, What is Reality? What is Love?
So honestly, I think that like the reason why a lot of people, like younger people like myself, are leaving the church in droves is literally because they feel like the church definitely... There's definitely a lot of hateful rhetoric. There is a lot, especially towards LGBT individuals. A lot of the times, churches are, let me speak, churches are very, a lot of churches, I've seen so many of them, they'll be like, some of them, it's so ironic when I hear, I'm a Christian, I don't judge.
What do you mean, Christians say? Why don't you meet some African Christians? Why don't you meet some South American Christians? Why don't you meet some Asian Christians? Guess what? They're not Republican and they're not Democrat. In fact, they really don't care too much about the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, but they do care a lot about Jesus Christ. You see, let's stop reacting to some political situation in the United States, some bias in America, okay? Christianity is not Western. Christianity began in Palestine. Christianity was not begun by a white dude. Christianity was not begun by the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. Christianity was begun by Jesus of Nazareth, who claimed to be more than a man. He claimed to be God in human form. And the overwhelming evidence is the dude was in touch with reality because he died and he rose from the dead. You can trust him. You can't trust Christianity. Christianity has been used to justify the Crusades, the Inquisition, Salem witch trials, slavery in the United States, Christianity has been used to justify. How sick is that? But my African-American brothers and sisters, don't give a white Christian racist the power to turn them off to the true Jesus, who wasn't white, and he wasn't a Republican, and he wasn't a Democrat, he wasn't a capitalist, he wasn't a socialist, and he wasn't a Marxist. He talked about the kingdom of God, not the kingdom of America. That's the Jesus you got to get to know.
So I have a quick question. So why do you believe that that the younger generation is leaving Christianity in droves?
Oh, it's real simple. Because people want to have sex outside of marriage. They realize that I don't want to be a total hypocrite and say I believe in Jesus. So I'm going to be a moral relativist, which means I write the rules, which means I can have sex with whoever I want to, whenever I want to. Go ahead.
However, I don't think that is the case because I'm like, when I was growing up in the church, so many of them had sex outside of marriage.
Were they being hypocritical?
Well, let me speak. So many Christians, like, I know, like, literally were having sex outside of marriage.
And it's wrong.
Yeah, they were, like, literally, and then meanwhile,
yeah,
they were literally calling girls sluts and whores.
That's, like, horrible.
Yeah.
So Jesus condemns that.
Which is
so
true.
What's your point?
Which is true.
What's your point?
And that's finished. I believe that a lot of the reason why, like, so much of Christianity is so distorted by most of the modern, like, churches, especially the evangelical churches.
Here we go, white America, white West.
Which...
So ream on it. But so then what? Again,
and come to speak of it, when you say, there's African Christians, there's Asian Christians.
Yeah, far more.
And what do you think is the reason why they became, why it's so predominant in certain parts? Colonialism.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. You know,
have you ever heard Philip talking to an Ethiopian eunuch in the Book of Acts? Do you know what that Ethiopian eunuch did? He went to Ethiopia, which is not in the United States, for those of us who are geographically challenged.
But he went to
Ethiopia, and the Ethiopian church is one of the oldest churches in the world, and it has nothing to do with the West. It's in Ethiopia, Northern Africa. That's one of the earliest churches. And you know where a dude named Thomas went? He went to India, to Southern India. And he planted a church in Southern India, which is also one of the oldest churches in the world, which means the Ethiopian church and the church in India is older than any church in the United States. Much older.
But do you want to know why a lot of those churches, a lot of Christianity was so widespread?
Oh, I would love for you. I would. Can you come here a second? I would love for you to tell me why he, as an African-American, believes in Jesus. Do you believe in Jesus? Okay, so please tell me, and I would love for you to just keep your line of thinking going, because you're doing a great job. Why does he believe in Jesus? Come on, man, give it to me.
He probably grew up with it, or...
He was colonized, right?
No.
Oh, no?
No, not...
Well, that was your line of thought. Those dumb Africans believe in Jesus because they were colonized by those horrible white folk.
Can y'all, like, stop?
Give me a break.
Can you stop using the race card for once? And
I... No, you started it.
You started it.
You started it, man.
Like, please. I mean, most people that I know that are Christians are either grew up with it, like myself, or like some of my relatives, a lot of my relatives that were Christian, a lot of them were addicts. And they turned to Christianity because they felt like that was the only way.
Yeah. And you know what the largest group of atheists demographically in the world is? White guys. Very interesting.
Yeah.
The largest group of atheists demographically in the world is white males.
But I'm not white.
Very interesting.
Not fully white, at least.
Fine, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about white folks. It's white males that comprise the highest percentage of atheists in the world. So please don't tell me that it's these people of different races who are colonized by Christians. Baloney. Africans understand. Materialism is bankrupt. Why? Because there's more to reality than making money. And Africans have put their faith in Christ, not because they've been colonized, but because they have a spiritual dimension as well as a physical dimension, and they appreciate capitalism. And that's why many African nations embrace capitalism. But they understand America is not the answer. The West is not the answer. The West is bankrupt in its moral relativism, in the evil that it does. But Jesus Christ, he is different. And that's why so many of my African-American brothers and sisters have put their faith not in Christianity, not in the white man's religion, in Jesus Christ, because he is different. And just read Dr. Martin Luther King, for crying out loud. Dr. King understood that Jesus Christ is different. And that's why he called the ministers of Birmingham, Alabama, to stop their segregation, to stop their racism.
So I'm hearing multiple abuses here of the church, which you have a legitimate point to say, and that's why Jesus Christ, his entire time here on earth, spoke against religious hypocrisy. So wouldn't it make a lot of sense for you to bring up hypocrisy? I agree with you. I only see that as leading credence to who Jesus truly was. If there was no Christian hypocrisy, then what in the world was Jesus talking about? And we would have to say, oh, he probably wasn't really speaking the truth too much. And the most recent sociological studies are evangelical, we could say Protestant, that's what the study shows, Protestant men are the least likely to abuse their children and their wives, and the most likely to help grow their kids up in well-being and happiness. No, don't take it from me. Go look at the studies yourself. Toxic masculinity. So what you're talking about just doesn't stack up to the latest research. And all of you who have parents who've divorced don't need me to tell you how painful divorce is. I performed a lot of weddings, and never have I performed a wedding with a guy who says, I can hardly wait to divorce her, or a woman who says, I can hardly wait to divorce him.
Divorce?
No. Okay, so divorce is not God's best. And divorce brings pain, separation, alienation, scarring into people's lives. And too many of you standing right here, right now, know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm sorry your parents divorced. I'm sorry they couldn't love each other the way Jesus calls us to. And it leads to a lot of garbage and a lot of scarring of children's lives. It stinks.
I hope I don't get divorced, honestly. I hope I end up marrying a loving man who cares for me, loves me, literally has a good job and all this stuff. And the thing about marriage is that you need to have, that it's all about cooperation. I've noticed that a lot of these evangelical, Catholic, Mormon, a lot of these marriages sound so miserable.
Well, I join you in hoping that you marry someone who loves you, but I happen to hope that it'll be a woman and not a man.
It won't be a woman, that's the thing. It won't be. I love, you know, here's the thing. When I hear people like you be like, oh, being gay, well, I chose this lifestyle.
I never said that.
Yeah, that's what you're implying.
No, I am not.
Yes, you
I
are.
Never implied that, I never said it.
You ever heard?
I don't have the faintest idea why you're gay, and I would never choose to say why you're gay, all right? There are lots of different reasons people are gay. There are lots of different
reasons
people are bisexual. There are lots of different reasons people like to have sex with animals. I don't know.
No. Don't compare me to somebody.
I'm not comparing you. I am making a point. The point is, I don't know what motivates a person to do what they do sexually. I don't know. I worked among prostitutes and pimps in inner city Boston when I was in seminary. I don't know what motivates a prostitute to be a prostitute. I don't know what motivates a pimp to be a pimp. It's their choice.
But I'm not a prostitute. But I didn't.
I didn't say you were a prostitute. You told me you're looking forward to marrying a man who cares for you, and I agreed with you. I hope that the person you marry will care for you. But I went on and pointed out that God created marriage, your sexuality, for you to enjoy with a woman who makes a lifelong commitment to you.
Well, I don't believe in God either, so that's irrelevant. You can't stay.
Well, then why do you have a rational mind? If there is no God, why is your mind rational?
Well, here's the. Well, why?
You know what you believe? You know what you believe? You believe that your rational mind comes from the irrational.
That's you.
Is that a leap of faith?
Oh.
That's blind faith. You believe, if you're an atheist, that the rational mind comes from the non-rational or the irrational, from inanimate matter. That's scary. That is blind faith. As a theist, I know that my rational mind, which puts me in touch with reality, is a gift from a rational being, God. But you, if you're an atheist, believe, oh no, my rational mind comes from the non-rational, the irrational. Wow, that is a miracle. The only problem is you don't have a miracle worker because you don't believe in God. I'm convinced your rational mind is a gift that God has given you. Therefore, please use it well because it's very important.
Yeah, well, I'm also young, stupid. I'm a whore. I make dumb decisions all the time, but don't we all?
Yes,
don't we all?
I make dumb decisions all the time also. I'm a sinner, and I desperately need God's grace, and that's what Jesus Christ offers me through his death on the cross. I'm a dirty, rotten sinner, just like you. I'm no better than you. I am no better than you. None. We both are sinners. We both have flipped God off, just in different ways.
I feel like I wish this was the reading challenge on Drag Race.
Yeah,
oh
well,
God.
I thought you chose to stand where you're standing. I didn't know anybody forced you to stand here. Is anybody forcing you to stand here?
Oh, no.
All right, so if you have a free will, I respect your free will. You can stand and talk the way you want to stand and talk.
You want to let anybody else speak? How about letting anybody else speak?
You bet. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I do think you can form like meaningful commitments of love without a model of being a Christian, though.
Sure, absolutely.
But I don't think they're delusional and also obligation generating, right? Like most contemporary theorists of love really do want to say like robust concern theory of like, I have such an impartial, like a partial concern for you. That justifies my love. So I'm not like sure that most people think, or for me even, I'm not sure I think that you have to have a Christian model in order to have true, partial, giving love, right?
Right. You don't have a Christian model, but in order to have real love, there's got to be a mind.
with a will. Why? Because if you say there is no God, what is reality made up of?
Well, I do think it's matter and energy, but love also exists. No, but like, I can also have love within this, like, confines of my brain and these emotions I have, but it's not just emotions, it's also partiality generating. It's also like, now that I love, say, my partner is now my beloved, and I have an extra obligations to them. So it's not just that, like, oh, love doesn't matter at all.
Have you ever loved an enemy?
Have you ever loved an enemy?
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean by an enemy here?
Did you love someone who hurt you?
Sounds like an antonym.
I think, like, that can be a charitable action, but it wouldn't be required of me to love someone who hurt me.
All right. You're choosing to say, this person is so valuable that in spite of the fact that they have threatened my survival, I'm going to love them and care for them. That is love. Now, I've experienced that, and I think almost every one of you here have experienced it. I don't care if you're an atheist, agnostic, or Christian. That experience shows you that there is some type of God, not Christ. It has nothing to do with Christ, okay? But it's got to tell you there's more to reality than matter and energy. There's this innate human being that every human being has to genuinely care for someone else, even their enemy. Now, that's weird. All right?
So you're saying two premises are true and then just assuming a conclusion. But we don't agree on those two premises. We agree on the first one, not the second one, right? But I don't have to buy into this logic that because love exists and things are material, I can't love. Again, we all experience objects of us, and we experience loving objects, we experience loving agents, loving people. We experience the partial benefits we get from our reciprocal love. But that doesn't commit us to this idea that now I have to be a materialist, right?
Yes, it does.
No, why?
An atheist is saying there is no God. That being does not exist. That's what an atheist is saying.
Sure.
In other words, an atheist is limiting reality. No, God is not real. Obviously, matter, energy, that's obviously real.
So are you going to give an argument besides just pointing and saying, like, material? No, and then love exists, so God.
But it's very simple, sir. I'm trying to take your thinking to its logical conclusion, and you're not following.
But it's not the logical conclusion.
So I'm up a creek without a paddle.
It's not the logical conclusion because
you're not following.
I think love exists. That's my premise. And I primitively experience it, empirically evident that I love my partner, I love my parents.
Now the question is why?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Next Generation Saints. I'm your host, Nick Coons. I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode of Give Me an Answer with Pastors Cliff and Stuart Konecki from... They pastor a church over New Canaan, Connecticut called Grace Community Church. I hope you guys have a chance to be able to go see them. It would be really awesome. And I hope that this ministry has really helped you out. I hope this episode has really helped you answer that question without God. What is reality and what is love? And if it has helped you answer some questions, great. If it hasn't, well, maybe it can help you pursue it further into the Bible and to understand who Jesus Christ is. And I hope this has drawn you closer to Jesus Christ and to your relationship with him. So, until next time, we meet again. May God richly bless you all, my dearly beloved friends.